When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How did the Celtics beat the Wizards so handily? Why was it so easy for the Jazz to close out the Clippers? Can anyone beat the Warriors in even one game? The only question left is, say it with me, you win. Hey sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown Podcast. Today I'm pleased to be joined, as always, by Coach Dave Dufour. Dave.
What's up?
Thank you for coming back home after a long journey.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't slept in my own bed in like a month, and got stranded at LAX today for hours. So yeah, it's been quite an adventure.
Well, next time you can call me, I might come down there and hang out. But
this was a
tough day. I had to hang out by the pool today.
I wasn't gonna deal with security again. I resigned myself to living on jelly beans and Coke Zero, and you know, I was ready for the zombie apocalypse to break out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, welcome to the West Coast, man, where the closest you can get, unless you're in Hawaii, to some dangerous places in the world. But nonetheless, speaking of dangerous places in the world, for people like, either you can talk about Isaiah Thomas and his teeth, or just the Wizards in general in the Garden, what do you make of that game one between the Celtics and the Wizards?
Well, you know, so the Wizards actually were doing pretty well. And I think if they had just stuck to their game, that we may be talking about them stealing the opening game of this series. But they went away from the things that were working. They started trying to play bully ball against Isaiah Thomas and post him up, which resulted in, like, I don't know, 12 fadeaway jump shots. Mm-hmm. That's not ideal. And while that was going on, the Celtics got hot. They wound up going 19 for 39 from three. It's hard to lose when you shoot that well from three, especially that volume. So, yeah, it's back to the drawing board, I think, for the Wizards.
Yeah, and they also matched them on the boards, which is another thing. They were getting out rebounded in that first round by 7 or 8 boards a game, and they all of a sudden, boom, there they are in, tying them at 38 all. And that's another big thing. You know, Jay Crowder, I think, ends up being a big revelation for them. 6 for 8 from three, like you mentioned, with the three-pointers. And some of them are pretty tough. Like, I guess he was just reverting because he didn't shoot very well in the first round.
Yeah, well, he's a 40% three-point shooter on the season. So, you know, I was a little shocked by how poorly he shot in that first-round series. But, you know, the key to this whole thing is Markieff Morris going out with that injury really early. I mean, you know, the Wizards were kind of rolling at that point, and he's so vital for them in this series. I think it's not quite a mismatch. I think that Crowder can guard him pretty well. But, you know, I think Markieff Morris is a sneaky athlete, and he's a decent enough shooter. And like we saw, you know, he gave Paul Millsap all he could handle in that first round. And so losing Markieff Morris for however long he's going to be out, I'm pretty sure he won't be in the next game. That's going to be tough for them to overcome too.
Yeah, I agree. He's that vital piece because they did get very good production from everybody else, at least the other big three. And I was telling you before we started recording, you know, if you look at the numbers here for the most of the Wizards, and you told them, like, you know, you're going to get, you know, 29 from Wall and 27 from Beal or whatever it was. And, Otto Porter is going to go 7 for 10 from the field with 11 rebounds. You'd probably think, yeah, they're right there. They're going to win that game. And in fact, they lost going away. The second and third quarters were really kind of vital. And it feels like sort of Marcus Smart is a bit of a linchpin here when they go small. And maybe it just took, the whole season for Brad Stevens to kind of figure out, you know, maybe Amir Johnson isn't the person to lean on.
Yeah, well, and then the other thing is supercharging Isaiah Thomas by knocking his tooth out.
Right.
I mean, I've never seen a guy bounce back from getting hit in the face, you know, as hard as it must have been to knock his tooth out, and then to come down and hit back-to-back threes like that. Like, he just looked like he was motivated by it.
Yeah, and you know, Terry Rozier grabbed 8 rebounds in that game too, and I was kind of like, I didn't catch it, and I went through to look at the time code on that, and I thought maybe he got like 3 in one possession or something like that. That's why he had 8, but it turns out no, they were spread out. Like, he was getting boards. Another reason why they were so close the tie with the rebounding was overall, you know. So, and the other thing that's funny is that whenever a team goes down 16-0, 17-0 to start the game, no one ever panics, right? It's always like, that's just too early to be up that much. Generally, you're going to come back, right? That just didn't even seem like a worry for anybody out there.
Yeah, no, not at all. But, you know, the more troubling thing for me is the three-point disparity. The Celtics shot 39. The Wizards only shot 23 of them. And you and I have, we've bounced around this idea that there must be a magic number for how many threes you can be. How would we call that? How many threes your opponent can make? How many more threes they can make than you? Like, right. What's the magic number? And the Celtics made 9 more threes than the Wizards. I'm gonna say that that's above whatever the magic number is.
Yeah, no, the magic. We did the magic number. I gotta kind of dig it up and remember exactly what it was. But it wasn't that much. It was, well, I mean, you know, 4 or something. I want to say 4 or 5 in that area. I gotta dig up the email I got from Arturo, but it was something like that, which makes sense. That's a 12-point swing there that will overcome any kind of, if you turn the ball over too much or you get out rebounded too much. Those are always the big three I'm looking at. We're talking about series, and it usually seems to boil down to those things. If you're going to get out rebounded and you're going to turn the ball over more, then the formula is simply, yeah, then you all you have to do is make, you know, 5 more threes and you can balance that out. Usually I would think it's a 90% success rate on that one, but we're going to do a big video on that and do some workup to make sure that that's exactly right. But that's what was indicated to me. So yeah, it's a real problem. I was kind of surprised though that the Washington Wizards would have that much trouble kind of keeping everybody locked down. I mean, certainly with John Wall out there, that should have been a good recipe for Isaiah Thomas shutting him down.
Well, so John Wall, he struggles a little bit guarding the pick and roll. Isaiah Thomas does such a great job of coming tight off the screen. And when John Wall is the trailing defender, he tends to go a little bit wide. If you go wide on Isaiah Thomas, he's going to put you in jail. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's going to draw contact and he's going to get those buckets up. He only shot 7 free throws tonight, but I think that in the series going forward, I expect him to get a few more.
I mean, hey, 7's good.
Seven's,
I'm sure,
a lot.
That he'll take it. You know, and when you go through and look at, you know, Isaiah Thomas's field goals, you see that, you know, not all of them are on Wall off of switches or he gets screened off. So I'm not going to hang it all on him, but certainly there are moments where he's just not engaged. It's one of those games where, you know, John Wall will do that. He will simply just not quite be involved. And, like, you know, Isaiah had one on him in the second quarter toward the end where he just was like looking around, I guess, for a screen. But meanwhile, Thomas just explodes at him and he's late and he pulls up on in his face. So, you know, I can't imagine Wall will be that disconnected again. But who knows if it's going to matter at this point? I mean, you know, Isaiah is flying high.
Yeah, like, look, man, when he's clicking the way he was in this game, it just makes the offense flow so much better for the Boston. You and I have talked about this. Our big concern coming into the playoffs was they relied too much on Isaiah Thomas to create on offense. And Al Horford has stepped up quite a bit. He had 10 assists tonight, facilitating at the elbows and I mean, pushing the ball in the break sometimes when he shouldn't. And, you know, so that's a huge help. If Al Horford can do what he did tonight, which is, you know, 21, 10, and 9 rebounds, it's going to be a short series and Boston's going to win. I mean, I said earlier today, I think the Wizards win in 6, but, you know, if Markieff Morris is out and if this is the Al Horford we're getting in this series, I just don't see how the Celtics can lose.
I agree, and it's kind of crazy to say that because we've been talking about the Wizards being the team. And, you know, I think we also have an idea, a sort of a matchup between Brad Stevens and
Scott Brooks.
You know, I think that could very well be part of this deal. And now we've been very impressed with Scott Brooks' coaching ability this year. But again, he's still a first-year coach with the Wizards. He's still, getting acclimated, but certainly like understanding under the pressure cooker, you know, it's not as easy. Whereas Stevens has been there for so many years now, there's a shorthand probably there, and he knows what's going on in that setting. So that might be part of it too. And so, you know what, my favorite part of these games when you're watching the Celtics is that like they're down huge to start the game, and they have that shot where they cut to Brad Stevens standing on the sideline, and he doesn't look like he has a care in the world. Like everything is just like as if he was up 10, 15 points and everything's running smoothly. And that's just like such an important thing as a coach. And that's my favorite part of watching these games.
Yeah, and he's got that baby face that just looks like he's for sure using Harry's razors.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you have a face like that and a shave like that, there's probably only one company that can give you that. And that would definitely be Harry's. And if you can, you use Harry's, don't you?
Absolutely, and it's by far the most smooth, comfortable glide I've ever had in a razor when I'm shaving my dome.
Oh, I know. Your dome looks great. It looks much better now since you started using them, and I use them. I love them, too, and I don't even care about shaving, but I got to tell you, when I opened up my trial set and started using it, they have this awesome shaving cream and then post-shaving gel that's really soothing, and so I think you guys out there should try Harry's Razors, because if you go to harrys.com/coachnick, you can get a free trial offer, their most popular trial set, and it's got.
You literally have nothing to lose.
Right, it is free, and it is a trial set which will get you hooked for the normal every month delivery of razors or as you see fit. They're much cheaper than what you buy at a drugstore, and also that whole thing where you have to like get someone to open the case for you, because apparently there's a big black market for razor blades, I guess, out there. So you get 5 German engineered blades, a lubricating strip. Flex hinge. It's a really good handle, by the way. It's like lightweight, but a good grip. So I can't recommend Harry's more than me saying go out and get them.
Yeah, absolutely. They're the best.
Harry's.com/CoachNick. Get your trial set for free right now. Head over there and say that we sent you. And there you go. What else do we have to talk about as far as the Celtics go? I mean, do you feel like they're going to pull us out if they have a good showing tomorrow? I think so.
I think that it's such a tough battle for the Wizards because of how shallow their bench is. And losing Morris really makes it even worse. They're probably going to move Oubre into the starting lineup.
Yeah.
And that's one less guy to come off the bench. I mean, you got to make up for like 38 to 40 of those Markieff Morris minutes, and that's just tough to do. He is a load, and they depend on him so much. And I think this series could be short if he's out.
Yeah, no, it's big. It's unfortunate that we have an injury that's going to affect it. But we'll see. Maybe Oubre goes nuts, and with that shot, it's starting. I don't know. I don't think he started at all this year, and certainly not regularly. And we'll have to see how that plans out. But that's we'll keep our eye on that one. Now we have to do a little postmortem for the next series, because that wasn't so fun for Clippers fans, the way that it all played out. And I'm going to throw my thoughts out there real quick. Let's start out with this. It felt like Doc brought in Paul Pierce. Oh, we're going to do the whole veteran treatment to him where he won't play much at all. We'll save him for the playoffs. But when you saw what he gave them in the playoffs and you realized, like, why were they saving this? This was not anything that he was going to help them with.
I don't know if he was actually in the plans for the playoffs. I think the Blake injury really just it affected, again, another team that's very top heavy. They don't have much of a bench. We know the wing depth is well known. They don't have any threes that can do anything. They rely on Blake quite a bit as a secondary playmaker. And without him, they're just not the same team. There are a lot of people that just want Chris Paul to take over the game and, put up 50. But that's not his game. He's at his best when he's like 28 and 14. And tonight he was not at his best. 13 points on 6 of 19 shooting. And when was the last time Chris Paul missed 13 shots in a game?
Yeah. No, he was off. He tweaked his foot at some point. I got all these Clipper fans mad at me because when they showed the replay of it, I was expecting him to like roll an ankle because he collapsed. And it really wasn't much at all there. Like, he just, kind of rotated his foot after he'd landed on the ground. There wasn't any weight on it when he did it. So, and he looked fine afterwards. But, I think the real problem ended up being that they just couldn't, they gave up 104 points, which, isn't like a huge amount of points, but they just couldn't stop them at all. Like, it really just, like, they never had any sense of, like, a defensive presence out there. And, you know, that's not saying a lot because, you know, the Jazz are stoppable on offense at times, and they could not do it.
Well, they gave up 104 points, and the Jazz only took 13 threes, making six of them. You know how hard it is to win a game in the NBA taking that 13 threes? This is insane. And, you know, the defensive effort just didn't seem to be there. You sent the one clip was at the end of the third quarter.
Yeah.
They had to defend for like 6.5 seconds. And there's four guys up at the top of the key. And Joe Johnson just dribbles right through the middle of them. And it was just like, okay, all right, so these guys are checked out. I mean, J.J. Redick, 1 of 5. How does J.J. Redick take 5 shots?
Yeah. Oh, well, they were – I mean, to give them credit, and it's also probably worthy of a breakdown sort of maybe – I felt like they were doing a nice job really focusing on him. And by the way, that might end up being like sort of the solution. Like they know that Chris Paul might not want to completely break everybody down and get a shot off in the beginning. And so they're going to make sure it's not Redick, right? And then after that, right, who else are they going to have? You know, I would love to see a DeAndre Jordan post up or two, but they, you know, they don't really do that. So it's a really fascinating conundrum when you think about it. Maybe they don't really have, you know, a lot of offensive power. And if you shut down Redick, right, and don't let him catch it and really be physical, then it's tough because Redick did not look good, even with the low shots.
Well, I think that this is very demonstrative of how important Blake Griffin is for this basketball team. I think that, again, his playmaking, his ability to pass from the elbow, and just to flat-out score is huge for them. You know, David Locke was on Zach Lowe's podcast the other day, and he brought up an interesting stat. I thought this was great. Not, you know, not to shout out a competitor, but, you know, we're all friends here. Blake Griffin was 11 for 11 in the series before he got hurt. 11 for 11 in the first 9 seconds of the shot clock. And the Clippers, their goal was to push the pace in this series because Utah is kind of a slow team. They have trouble scoring. And the Clippers are a pretty good offensive team with Blake Griffin. And so they were doing that, and they were finding success. And once he goes out, they just didn't have any solution. They could not come up with an answer to how to get a bucket.
Yeah, no, that is true. I won't. I'm not going to deny because I mean, you know, for whatever faults he might have, he certainly is. At the very least, is better than what else they replaced him with. And Doc sort of had his hands tied. So you're right, but there's still no excuse for like they kind of just sleptwalked through the second half, and they were down by double digits almost the entire time. And you know, a lot of the faults that came out, you know, so Jamal Crawford is ISOing, and then he was doing a little bit of scoring. But yeah, again, you know, there were some lineups out there where it was like Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford, and I'm trying to remember like who else it was, but it was just you know, just nobody could play defense, you know. And then, you know, I almost thought they were going to troll them and start just hacking DeAndre, you know, in the fourth quarter just to, like, you know, take things completely out of the game. They didn't do that because obviously they want the clock to run, but it crossed my mind. I'm like, you know, might as well to get him out of there so they could score easier, but they didn't need it, and now they lost. So, you know, the other thing that's really interesting now is going into the offseason with the Clippers. I had said, and I think we both probably maybe, well, I don't know if we agreed because there's so much money on the table for Chris Paul, but it felt like if they were going to lose in the first round, he would leave. And
yeah. I think the money keeps them there. As a matter of fact, I think they keep everybody. I think there's a chance they even keep Redick, even though he's going to get paid as well. But just because their financial situation wouldn't really allow them to rebuild on the fly, and I don't think Steve Ballmer wants a non-playoff team next year.
Remind me, Redick is an unrestricted free agent, right?
He is, but they have his bird rights. Yeah, he's been there long enough.
Okay, and then what about is Blake Griffin unrestricted?
Blake Griffin is unrestricted, and so is Chris Paul.
Okay, so by the way, which is another one of those things where usually, like, really good GMs don't get stuck with three of their starters all unrestricted the same year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the timing of this was not ideal.
And and by the way, I'm not even sure there's control. I got to go back and look at, like, all that stuff, but, you know, I feel like that's a thing they look at. But then again, with the contracts now, it almost seems like there's no choice. It's either a very standard, this is what you're going to get for that level,
right?
I think. But I'm not positive. I got to look at that. But either way, it's a brutal situation because they all could walk. And, you know, the reason why I'm thinking now that they would walk is certainly, you know, before today's game, I felt like, okay, it's the first round. If they lose, he might leave. But they got blown out at home in game seven. I know with Blake isn't there, and that's a big deal. But I don't know. That's the last thing they have in their minds as they leave Staples is like that the team kind of quit on them. There was not a lot of smiles, not a lot of, you know, camaraderie in the way out. And now he's got to, you know, that's what he's negotiating against, right?
Yeah, it's a team that doesn't appear to really like each other very much or to like to play together very much. And so, you know, there's no joy there when they're on the basketball court. And you and I have talked quite a bit about how important that is for a team. And, I just don't know what they do. I mean, you know, there's speculation Doc may leave to go to Orlando to take over the GM job there. You know, who knows what's going to happen? And it's going to be an interesting offseason for them. But, you know, we kind of glossed over the Jazz. But I want to point out the Jazz actually, you know, they had a really good game tonight. They did some interesting things with the lineup. They played all four point guards. Rudy Gobert only played 13 minutes tonight. And I know you just did a fantastic video on Rudy Gobert and his defense. But you also did a great video about Chris Paul and John Stockton, which – to me is probably your best work. And I want to bring that up just because of how many point guards the Utah Jazz actually played tonight. I mean, they really did. They played four point guards tonight. I mean, you know, Neto and Mac was a total of 5 minutes and Exum played eight. But still, that just goes to show they're actually putting a premium on ball handling. There were times where Joe Johnson looked like the point guard.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Joe Johnson tortured the Clippers all series long. And, like, that's the guy, like, that's the Paul Pierce that they, you know, I guess they were maybe hoping for. But maybe you're right. Maybe Paul Pierce is going to play it out, just sit on the bench and maybe at the spot minutes they needed him in the playoffs and hope that maybe they were going to run. I mean, I guess the bottom line is before the season started, I guess Paul Pierce must have looked at that and said, oh, they have a shot at winning a title, right? I mean, that must have been what he was thinking. But getting back to the Jazz, yes, and also thank you so much for those kind words. Doing this Stockton versus CP3 video, part of it was kind of I just wanted to do like a love letter to Stockton, even though at the very end you might see who I ended up saying who I think is better, but at the very least I felt like there's a lot of young players and young people who don't really know Stockton at all, and it was a chance to go through his game. And I remember, I mean, I watched him play live. I mean, I'll never forget when he came to the stadium in his rookie year and, like, he got in the game, like, who the hell is this? And he had that fake spin move where he's going to, like, bring it back out to, like, set up a play and then spin right back and score. He did, like, two times, I think. And it just was like, whoa, who is this guy? So it's fascinating. And you know what? Quinn Snyder is a really good coach. Really good coach. Like, they run their sets. He's got a really good, like, you know, control and meter over the team. I just walked away really impressed watching him coach and you know, probably not so much with the Clippers.
Yeah. Quinn Snyder really has a pulse on his players and he knows when to ride. I mean, Hayward played 42 minutes tonight. You know, I think that was smart. I think he knew, hey, we've got to ride Hayward a little bit. You know, he had 26 points, led him in scoring. Joe Johnson had kind of been the superstar, at least if you're on NBA Twitter. Joe Johnson's everybody's favorite, but Gordon Hayward is the guy. If they're gonna beat the Warriors in the next round, they're gonna need Gordon Hayward to actually play like a superstar. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think that you're gonna beat the Warriors, but that's the way to do it. You know, is to go with their best player, who is Gordon Hayward, and I think Quinn Snyder did a great job tonight of you know, maximizing what he's got.
Right. It's unfortunate for Hayward that they have waves of defenders for him. And the second that, like, Klay Thompson gets tired, if he's going to guard him, then they're going to throw Iguodala on him. And then they can throw Livingston on him. I mean, it's like it's going to be a never – it's not going to let up at all for him. And I feel like Joe Johnson is probably the similar kind of thing. I mean, if they try and go small with Joe Johnson at the four, you know, they can throw Draymond on him. And I just don't see Joe Johnson doing that well against him at all. Certainly compared to like what the Clippers gave him, so it's a tough situation. But that said, in theory, the Jazz should be able to give them some of their own medicine. They should be able to give them some problems on their other end. If Gobert can stay out of foul trouble, which is like the big thing, you know, today with him, and you know, it's weird. The refs sometimes they just come out and decide like we're just going to start blowing that whistle. It's weird the way they ref it sometimes.
Well, you know, to talk about the refs a little bit, and I understand they do the best that they can, but the garbage 3-point fouls, the 3-point shooting fouls, like they just have to go. They just have to go. Guys are hunting them all day now. And it's starting to ruin the flow of the game. And I think this is something that the competition committee will look at this summer. And the other thing is, like you just said, it seems like there are games during the playoffs where from one game to the next, the whistle has completely changed as far as physicality inside. And I think we need to kind of homogenize this and bring it to, you know, a baseline and say, this is how much we're going to let you get away with, and this is how much we're going to not let you get away with. But it's got to be better than it was today. I mean, Favors and Gobert both fouled out today.
Mm-hmm.
You know how rare that is?
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah, no, it was troubling. I mean, certainly Jazz Twitter was up in arms all game long. Some of them are legit. Other ones are not, and it's, you know, and there are certain refs that would come out there and you're already like, ugh, we know we are in for it, which means to me that there's no changing those guys, that there's only not using them as you progress in the playoffs. But meanwhile, you're having these first round series where these guys are getting the shots because there's a lot more games. And I don't know what you do. Ronnie, actually, you know, we did the breakdown on the James Harden foul, that went James Harden himself doing it. He felt like it's an offensive foul. And you make a couple of those calls, they're going to stop doing it pretty quick.
Well, I'm going to disagree. And I know now he's an expert and he knows better than me. But in my opinion, what happens, you know, if there's – like there's – hand checking is illegal. And so what he does is the second he feels that hand, which is a foul, right, according to the rules, that's when he does that hook. And now if he doesn't do that hook, the refs will never call anything. And so basically what you've got to do is you got to either get rid of the hand checking call or you got to start calling the hand check.
Right. Or the defense needs to be more disciplined to not – I mean, some of the ones, it's like hard. You're trying to get around the screen. I get it. But like, you know, the Taj Gibson one we showed, like I don't know what he was doing. He literally stuck his arm out, like inviting him to like hook underneath it. And there's no doubt it is a foul. Like you have to call it. Now, so at that point, it's like the only question now is, are you going to make it a rip through foul and just out of bounds no matter what, unless they're in the penalty? But by the way, so what? They get in the penalty, then he'll just be doing it anyway and right. Get the two free throws, so it's better than none. And so it's like it is a real problem, and it's frustrating because in part it's like, okay, the rules are still a little murky here, so he's taking advantage like every good player would do. But yeah, when you start seeing Gordon Hayward do it, and now like Chris Paul was trying to do it.
Kawhi Leonard did it the other night.
Yeah, Kawhi is doing it. It's just really frustrating. By the way, this kind of reminds me, George Hill had a couple times down the stretch where he took Chris Paul and did all the wily veteran stuff. He put him in jail on one play. Then he got him stuck around a screen and pulled up for another J. It was like, you know, George Hill is, I mean, everyone, I know he's like underrated as it is, but he's like, he is that sneaky good player, really.
He's a professional point guard.
Yes.
I mean, he's really good. You know, like we didn't get to see a lot of that in Indiana. He played a lot off ball, you know, and played a lot of defense. But when Paul George was out that year, we did see flashes of this, the high usage George Hill. And so, you know, I knew that he could do this. I mean, this is a guy who's going to get big money this summer. I mean, he's athletic. He can shoot. And he's a good defender. I think that he's been underrated his entire career. And there was like a 2-week period this year where he was maybe overrated. I think now people are coming around where they're like, you know, George Hill is a damn good player.
You know what? I almost didn't want to believe you that when he said he could shoot because I couldn't remember. But you know what? He shot 40% from three, and he took about five a game. That's legit. That's a legit good shooter. The question is, the Jazz have a lot of questions, I guess, as well in this offseason too, because they have a lot of interesting pieces, and they have to figure out just how far that's going to get them. You know, do we see them have – how many games do we see them beating the Warriors?
I think the Warriors are going to sweep.
Okay. I think
the Warriors are going to sweep. I think – I'm starting to feel like the Warriors might sweep all the way to the finals and Uh-oh. Through the finals.
Fo-fo-fo.
I know. Dude, they just – they look so good. And, you know, there's a lot of people that accuse you and I of kind of, you know, riding the Warriors.
Broom handles?
Yes. That was not the word I was thinking of, but yes, better word. But the truth is, they're just a really good basketball team. They play really well. They defend otherworldly defense, otherworldly offense. It's pretty much unstoppable. And you know, they've got Kevin Durant. They can just hand the ball to if things aren't going well. And no one else has that. I mean, playoff JaVale McGee has probably been the best center in the playoffs, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell because I'm trying to think of all the other centers.
Him or Gasol.
Yeah, Gasol had some moments. But yeah, he's certainly, when he's engaged like that, the way he fits into what they need him to do is more perfect than anybody else. So yeah, in fact, and, you know, JaVale probably deserves a breakdown, wouldn't you say?
I think so. I think you need to do one.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking, you know, I'm open right now. I don't have anything planned for tomorrow after I've been really grinding. I mean, this one I did on Stockton and CP3, you know, was a labor of love. And
it was beautiful.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm not going to lie. This is going to be me, like, kissing your ass for a minute, but you did such a great job with the music and the mood, and I loved starting with the quotes. Like, it was great. It was really, really great.
Thank you. You know, it's funny. It's because, you know, I am an editor by trade. Before I started B-Ball Breakdown, I was an editor who did, you know, I did these kind of things. And I've kind of, you know, if you haven't noticed, we've sort of changed the way we're doing our videos in the last, like, 10 days. And I kind of revamped everything because of YouTube changed everything. And it's really gotten me back to my old tricks where I've had to figure, you know, I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I'm actually editing to the beat, you know, which I never would used to do. And I'm playing with audio. I mean, it's like I'm doing all the tricks I used to do. And you know what? It's worked. I mean, people are watching these things a lot more than they were.
I think that these last few videos, especially the Stockton and Chris Paul one, and for you guys listening, please go watch it. I think this is your best work. I really like it. It's so good.
Cool. What's the next one I should do then? I mean, people are yelling at me that I should have done like Nash in there. But then
Nash versus Curry?
Yeah. Then I was like, okay, let's do Nash and somebody else. So Nash and Curry. Yeah, they're both two-time MVPs, and there's some interesting stuff there. That could be fun.
Yeah. What about Kawhi and Kawhi and Kobe?
Kawhi and Kobe. Would that be – that would be – yeah, it's kind of sacrilegious, wouldn't it be, kind of?
A little bit. I mean –
the Kobe fans would be like – they think it's like Kobe and, Smush Parker or something.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But that's interesting. Well, I'll look at it. We'll have to figure. Maybe I'll do a poll.
Do a poll. Guys, hit us on Twitter and, tell us what you want to see.
Yeah. I'm always open to that. And the only thing I didn't mention, by the way, in this thing was, you know, the whole kind of like complaining of the refs. And, you know, I mentioned the meltdown a little bit stuff. I didn't want to get into it too much with Chris Paul. But like that apparently is a big thing when they're talking about like Stockton versus Chris Paul is like the kind of teammate he was. I have a feeling that a lot of Chris Paul teammates will defend him and be like, you know, he's my man and I'll go down with him, whatever. But no,
I don't know. I mean, they will just because, you know, like that's the public standing part, but you know, they're both kind of dirty players though. I mean, Stockton was one of the dirtiest.
Yeah. We have Kerr on record just recently saying how dirty he was. Yeah, that's true too. I kind of wanted to keep it positive, but yes, that is a thing. I mean, dirty, I guess it's dirty. I guess, you know, the little veteran stuff is sort of dirty. I don't think he's trying to hurt anybody, but certainly any kind of advantage he could get. But when you watch some of that stuff with John Stockton and how good he was at changing pace, you know, it's like because he was good at changing pace, he basically was as fast as anybody else he was playing against.
Absolutely.
So, well, another great show, Dave.
Yeah, this was so easy.
Right. And we have, some really great games and a really good second round. So looking forward to getting multiple podcasts done with you this week, or at least this one and then another, at least one more this week. So we'll see what happens. But I don't know. Thanks for coming on. Get some sleep. Get some rest. Get back in your own bed.
That's right. That's the plan.
But by the way, every boy who does not travel thinks his mom's soup is the best.
Okay. Is that a saying?
I suppose it's worth traveling now, right? To remind yourself of that.
Sure. So, yes. You know. Well, the soup in New Orleans is very good.
I can imagine. And everything else is too. So anyhow, thanks for coming on the show. And we'll check in with you a little bit later this week. Find us all on Twitter where we'll have another rabid conversation about NBA. And don't forget, sports fans, at B-Ball Breakdown, we're not a channel. We're a conversation. You in? Are you in, Dave?
Yes, I am.